Welcome to the Solomonster Sounds Off, episode 218 on FCScoops.com. It is Sunday, May 13th, 2012. I am the Solomonster. First, a very happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there. It is indeed Mother's Day. A very happy Mother's Day to my mother as well, Mama Solomonster, for blessing me with the ability to ramble on and on and on each and every week. And people keep coming back and listening to it. I can't really explain it. So happy Mother's Day to her, and again, all the moms out there. We actually have quite a few who listen to this show each and every week, so I just want to say thank you for all that you do and hope you enjoy your day. We got a lot of things to talk about here, but the first thing I want to address is last night's Ring of Honor iPay-Per-View. It was titled Border Wars from the Ted Reeve Arena. I believe it was in Toronto, Ontario. Big event for Ring of Honor. It was the culmination of their big angle involving Kevin Steen, Mr. Wrestling, and Davey Richards. And they were to have their clash for the Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Championship. Lance Storm, also wrestling on the show. Rhino, some old faces from WWE. Fit Finlay had a match. And, of course, Benjamin and Haas competing against the Briscoes for the tag team titles. They've had a blood feud going back almost a year. So a big show for Ring of Honor and a big night in that it was the first time that Ring of Honor brought their iPay-Per-View service in-house. In the past, they've had quite a few issues with Go Fight Live to the point of almost high comedy. Where there would always be stream issues, people couldn't see the show, there were just a ton of problems, and it was really affecting the company's bottom line. I think somebody estimated on one of the recent Ring of Honor iPay-Per-Views that went awry with technical difficulties, it may have cost the company up to $30,000 or $40,000. And let me tell you, that is money that Ring of Honor cannot afford to be losing, even though they are kind of backed and owned now by, not backed, they're owned by Sinclair Broadcast Group, which is a multi-million dollar television company, but the losses for Ring of Honor, it's not good for the health of the company. And so they decided to go ahead and not rely on Go Fight Live, not rely on any other service. They brought their service in-house. They conducted a test of that service this past week on Wednesday, and that should have been an omen right there because they had issues even with the test on Wednesday, although they assured all of their fans there would be no problems, the stream would be excellent, the quality would be excellent, the service would be reliable, and Border Wars was going to be a big show. And so I went ahead and decided to order the pay-per-view last night because I was genuinely interested in some of the matches. I wanted to see the Lance Storm-Mike Bennett match. I didn't see their first match at the Showdown in the Sun in Fort Lauderdale, I believe it was, WrestleMania weekend. I wanted to see his match. I wanted to see Fit Finlay against Roderick Strong, and I wanted to see the main event with Davey Richards is defending against Kevin Steen, especially after last week I talked about finally being able to see the Davey Richards-Michael Elgin match from Showdown of the Sun, which I thought was an excellent match and was really a star-making performance for Michael Elgin, who also had a match on this show against Adam Cole, kind of a mid-card match. So I ordered the pay-per-view, and for those of you who attempted to do the same, you probably experienced a lot of the same issues that I did. A lot of other people did as well. Tons of technical issues plagued the stream to the point where people could not get in. Even after an hour plus, some people just gave up. They basically said, forget this. I'm not even going to bother. Or you would be able to log in. You would immediately be logged out. It was extremely frustrating, especially for paying customers who really want to support the product, who had an interest in seeing the show. Unfortunately, a lot of people did not. Now, in my case, what ended up happening was the stream finally kicked in with about an hour, hour and a half maybe, left in the show. I missed the Lance Storm match. I missed pretty much all the undercard stuff, so I'm kind of pissed about that. I came in right around the time the Fit Finlay match with Roderick Strong was going on, so really I only saw three matches. Now, to their credit, Ring of Honor did post a message, kind of a make good on what happened last night. They said if a refund is demanded, they will grant refunds to those who request it. Otherwise, what they're offering to their customers is the full replay of the show for Border Wars, as well as free access to their next internet pay-per-view called Best in the World on June 24th. for anybody who ordered Border Wars last night. So for those of you who did, be aware of that. And it's a nice gesture on their part. I think it's really the best thing that they could possibly do. You can't undo what happened. But the reality, to me, is stark. Because there were a lot of people who have been very upset in the past about the issues that ROH has had. Some people have swore off the product and said, you know what, forget it, I'm not going to give them another chance. A lot of people did give them another chance. And after what happened last night, I feel badly for the company. Because obviously this is not something that they wanted to happen. I'm sure there was a lot of cursing and a lot of panic going on backstage. And there were other issues as well, even once the feed was working with, you know, loud audio from pre-taped packages over the announcing. Steve Corino did commentary during, or was to have done commentary during the main event. Really didn't have much to say, but when he was on camera doing commentary at the very beginning, his headset didn't work. So there were a lot of issues like that during the show, but I feel badly for the company because you have to wonder, how much damage did this do to the promotion long term? You know, and there are always people that will say, oh, I'm never going to watch it again, and of course they will. But I have no doubt, if you look at some of the feedback, there are people who said that was it. Last night was the last straw, and they're giving up on Ring of Honor. You just at some point, you reach a critical point where you ask yourself, how much damage does this really do to the company long term? Did Ring of Honor lose a lot of fans last night? Are there going to be people in enough numbers who are willing to order iPay-per-views from them in the future? Because this is not the first time this has happened. And it really concerns me about the long-term future of the company when stuff like this happens. So, not a good night on what should have been a great night for Ring of Honor. I think, from all accounts, the people who were there live, one of the listeners of the Sound Off, Kyle, who I want to give a shout-out to here on the show, I did on Facebook and Twitter as well. Kyle was at the show. He was actually front row. He brought a Solomonster Sounds Off sign with him that got on camera. There's a screen cap up online. Really cool stuff, so I want to give Kyle a shout-out. And he also felt badly because he said the show was awesome. And by all accounts, the people who were in the Ted Reeve Arena had the same thing to say. It was a great show that a lot of people simply did not get to see. I saw, again, three matches. Can I really say that it was a great show? I really can't, because I can't judge the rest of the card. Now, I'll give a quick review here of the matches that I did see. I don't know if I'll end up going back and watching the rest. I'm sure I will at some point, since I'll have access to the replay. But for now, I figured I'll just go through some of the matches I did see really quick. Roderick Strong and Fit Finlay, again, was the first match that I saw once the stream was working for me. I thought it was a pretty good match. You know, it was, if you're a fan of mat-based wrestling, if you're a fan of technical wrestling and stiff slaps and stuff like that, then you probably really enjoyed it. No big surprise that Roderick Strong and Fit Finlay are both very good professional wrestlers. I thought it dragged a little bit at points. It wasn't the most exciting match in the world. I thought it was very good, but really nothing more. And Roderick Strong wins in the end, as he should have, with a sick kick right to the face, knocked out Finlay, 1-2-3 match over. So that was that match. We had the tag team championship up for grabs. It was the world's greatest tag team, Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas, challenging the Briscoes, Jay and Mark. This was just a garbage match. I don't mean a bad match. I just mean lots of plunder, lots of weapons, and people going through tables and just doing sick dives out of the ring. That had me cringing at certain points, but it was what you would expect a match like this to be. I thought it was excellent. I thought it was a very good brawl until the finish. I thought the finish, you know, the finish just reeked of kind of an old-school professional wrestling finish that isn't necessarily a good one. It was, I think, Charlie Haas using a rag that was supposedly soaked in chloroform or ether or something, a la Undertaker and Giant Gonzalez at WrestleMania. Of all the matches to borrow that finish from, come on. And I know that that finish has been used in other matches as well, but in a Ring of Honor match, I would not go with a finish that was once used in an Undertaker-Giant Gonzalez match, but they did here. And I think Charlie used it on, I want to say, Mark Briscoe, and he was knocked out from the fumes, and then he pinned him 1-2-3, and that was it. And that was a tag title change as well. So the new champions, Haas and Benjamin, kind of a shitty finish, in all honesty, to what was otherwise a very good match. And then we had the main event. It was Davey Richards defending the Ring of Honor World Championship, which he has held now for, I think, for close to a year, against Kevin Steen. And they've had this storyline going for a while now, where Kevin Steen is almost the modern-day Stone Cold, this rebellious character in Ring of Honor who has always been a heel, most of the time anyway, been a heel. Lost the match in Ring of Honor, I believe it was in December of 2010, and the stipulation was that he had to leave Ring of Honor, which he did for many months, and then he started showing his face again, but of course he wasn't allowed back, and this has gone on now for quite some time, and this was his one and only shot at the championship, which he never really should have gotten, but he got under the skin of the champion, and there's an underlying feud here between Steen and Jim Cornette, the authority figure in Ring of Honor, another played-out authority figure storyline. We'll talk more about that on this show this week. And so here's his one and only title shot. I think the stipulation was that if Steen didn't win the championship, that's it, which was kind of a dead giveaway for me. I kind of hate when they do that because you're telegraphing the finish by saying if you do not win the title here in this match, you will never again get another title shot. And to me, that telegraphed the finish. But the finish was what it was. It should have been Kevin Steen winning in his home country. He is Canadian. He got a big response coming out, even though he technically has been the heel in this feud. But he's been getting cheered like crazy. Again, is the anti-authority figure babyface in this feud. And Davey Richards did what he should have done. He played the role of heel in this match, and I thought he did a very good job. But in the end, Kevin Steen wins the championship. The time was right. The place was right. The finish was right. I thought the finish was a little sloppy, I guess. I will say that this was a very good match, but not on the level of the Richards-Elgin match I talked about last week from Showdown in the Sun. I thought that was a much better match. Even though the finish in that match as well, that finish came out of nowhere. The finish in this match didn't come out of nowhere. They were building and building and building to it. But I felt, I don't know if it was the announcing of Kevin Kelly or what it was, it felt a little flat to me. But the place went nuts. Everybody in the arena seemed like they obviously enjoyed it. They wanted to see Kevin Steen badly win the championship, and that's what they did. And that's a great example sometimes of giving the people what they want. You know, people knew that Kevin Steen was going to win, and I, like I said, I think they telegraphed the finish by adding that dumb stipulation. Just because people know what's going to happen or have a pretty good bead on what the outcome is going to be doesn't mean that you change it just to swerve them. Thankfully, Ring of Honor did not do that, and Kevin Steen is the new Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Champion. So the show certainly ended well. What I saw was excellent stuff. I can't judge the rest of the show because I didn't see it. But they've just got to get their shit together in the future. They have to. I think if they have one more iPay-per-view disaster like they had last night, I think it's death for the company. I really do. You can't keep doing that. You just can't keep screwing over your loyal customers that way. I know it's not something that they wanted to have happen, but to say that, you know, it was unforeseen or they didn't plan for it, you know, they boosted the capacity of their server and all this. You're not having 5, 10,000 people order this iPay-per-view. Ring of Honor has to have a sense, on average, of how many people order these shows. Even if it's a little over what that limit would be, you need to prepare for this in the future so that you can avoid these issues altogether. If that means boosting the capacity even more and pumping some more money into it, then so be it. I don't know what the problem last night was, but they got to get their shit together and make sure this doesn't happen again, because if it does, like I said, I just think it's bad news for the company going forward, and it would be really a shame to drive away all of these loyal customers. And Ring of Honor, the product they offer is refreshing. It's different than TNA. It's different than WWE. Competition's a great thing. It's always good to have that, you know, third or fourth wrestling company out there. And to think that their downfall, potentially, I don't want to sound overly dramatic here, but I don't think I'm being overly dramatic. For this to happen one more time, I think, could ultimately mean death for the company, because you drive these people away, and these are your loyal paying customers, and you just can't do that. So hopefully in the future they'll be able to avoid that. Speaking of people who are interested in fans of professional wrestling, if you are a fan of having a lot of wrestling matches on your show, you should probably check out SmackDown from this week if you missed it. Not a particularly exceptional show by any means, but there were 10 matches on the card this week. 10 on SmackDown. Of course, the downside is that it means nothing went terribly long, because really, how many long matches can you have with 10 on a two-hour show? But I am enjoying Antonio Cesaro so far. He had a match on this show with Alex Riley. It really wasn't anything special, but I'm just enjoying the evolution of the Cesaro character. Again, I think there's big things in his future. It took him long enough to get there, for crying out loud, so it's just nice to see him in a featured role on one of the two big shows. Speaking of Cesaro, you also should check out a match I posted on my Facebook on Thursday night. It was an FCW match from about a month ago, I think it was. Cesaro against Richie Steamboat. Solid 30-minute match that was made all the more better by the announced team of Jim Ross and William Regal. Can we please have a draft show solely so that these two can be traded over to Raw? Please? Would that be too much to ask? These two were awesome together, just great. And again, why you would bench your best player or relegate him to the minor leagues while your team is struggling, that's the analogy I would use, is just mind-bogglingly stupid to me. But at least we can enjoy good old JR and these little nuggets through the glory of YouTube. So check out that match if you may have missed it. Let's talk about Monday Night Raw this past Monday night from Greensboro, North Carolina, which was once a great bastion of professional wrestling. The Carolinas, Ric Flair country, as they like to say. Well, if Greensboro is still considered to be a wrestling town or a wrestling city, then that might be a sad description of what it's like to be a wrestling city in 2012. First of all, you're in Greensboro, North Carolina, a state that has been in the headlines quite a bit this past week. They banned gay marriage, and apparently they banned people from the arena as well. At least I thought they did, because it didn't really sound like there was anyone there to me. This was not a terribly loud group of people, wouldn't you say? Big development on this show was the return of Paul Heyman as Brock Lesnar's legal representation. He came out, cut a very good promo, explaining that Lesnar felt betrayed, that his contract demands that had been agreed to were not being met, and as such, he is quitting WWE. And I'll talk more about Heyman in a minute. Other than that, the Sheamus Alberto Del Rio match at Over the Limit was changed to a four-way, and nothing else of note really happened on this show, to be honest. It was a largely average edition of Raw. We had John Laurinaitis come out to open the show with a promo. He suddenly dislikes the fact that people make fun of his voice and said that those that do would be punished. He talked about being injured in Japan by Dr. Death Steve Williams, which resulted in his voice being what it is today, you know, the John Laurinaitis voice. So, and by the way, that is true. That is true. As was pointed out in this week's Wrestling Observer newsletter, there was an interesting note in there about that. In Dr. Death's book, he said that Laurinaitis was supposed to duck a clothesline, and he did not duck, and he got nailed right in the throat, and his larynx was crushed, which resulted in the voice that he has today. Anyway, they aired some still shots of Laurinaitis from his days working in Japan. He claimed that he was the Hulk Hogan, Steve Austin, and Rock of Japan, all rolled into one. That's what he said. CM Punk came out, you know, the guy that Laurinaitis was feuding with before they inexplicably decided to put Laurinaitis in a match with John Cena instead. Punk claimed that Big Johnny only went to Japan because nobody would pay to see him in this country. He said Laurinaitis is ugly, stupid, has no friends, and is a toolbox. And when you couple that with what CM Punk said to a fan on Twitter this past week, I think that, you know, having an anti-bully campaign while having somebody like CM Punk as your WWE champion who's out there, for God's sake, calling his boss stupid. I mean, what is he, 5 years old? Anyway, Laurinaitis put Punk in a match with Lord Tensai later in the show, thus punishing not only Punk, but really punishing all of us. We didn't do anything to him, but we got punished. And you have never seen such a wretched reaction to the announcement of a main event in your life. People did not care about this match at all. They just did not care. Normally, when you get an announcement like this, you get one of two reactions. If you're announcing a main event on Raw, you will get a happy reaction. People think it's a big match. Maybe somebody in the match is the hometown boy, or it's, you know, John Cena against whoever, and the crowd goes, yay! And they love it. Or, if they're announcing, let's say, a pay-per-view match that people want to see, there'll be boos because they're pissed they're not getting the match that night. Instead, they're announcing that, you know, in 2 weeks at whatever pay-per-view, you're going to see blank versus blank. This was not the case in this situation. This was a main event that was being announced for the show on that night, and you could hear a pin drop in the arena. And that should have been a sign of things to come. Big Show beat Cody Rhodes by count out when Cody apparently decided to morph himself into the 1993 version of Shawn Michaels by just grabbing his title and walking away. Eve came out. She demanded an apology from Big Show for mocking John Laurinaitis' voice backstage in a segment earlier in the show. She demanded an apology. She said there aren't a lot of options out there for a 7-foot-tall, 40-year-old freak outside of wrestling. And then Show finally apologized and he left. They did a fine job here of making the Big Show look like quite the pussy in this segment. By the way, have I told you how unbelievably played out these heel GM angles are yet? I think I have. You'll probably hear me mention that a couple more times. Dolph Ziggler beat Kofi Kingston, a pretty good little match. I'm glad to see Dolph get a win. I was ecstatic to see that he actually beat somebody on the show. I call that progress. And at Over the Limit, it will be Ziggler and Swagger meeting Kingston and Truth for the two giant pennies. During this match, we had Abraham Washington, AW, I will call him from here on out. He was backstage watching the match on a monitor with Primo and Epico, and then Mason Ryan even made a quick cameo. I know they had Mason Ryan as the bodyguard for Dolph Ziggler on one of the recent house shows. I guess that was some sort of test. I'm not sure if they're going to move ahead with that as an angle on TV. My guess is that they just were trying something new at a house show, and we probably will never hear of it again. But this made it seem like Ryan would be recruited for AW's stable instead, so I guess we'll see where that goes. John Cena did an interview via satellite. Holy shit, he was there via satellite. Why does he not care about the WWE Universe? What's wrong with this guy? He's via satellite. Anyway, he was sporting a sling. He said that he has been medically cleared to compete, but he still needs to have his elbow drained a couple of times a day. He said the doctors recommended that he take a couple of months off. A couple of months? But they cleared him. What kind of doctors are they? I'm guessing they work for the New York Mets medical staff, but I have not been able to verify that. We found out the reason Laurinaitis wasn't punished by the board of directors is because they contacted John Cena instead, which seems like an odd chain of command to me, but okay. He told them not to fire Laurinaitis until after the pay-per-view so that he can kick his ass. What an awfully kind and understanding board of directors. I would not want to work for that company. So that was that. By the way, Cena did wrestle a dark match after the show, so he made it to the building in record time. Not sure if he actually wrestled with the sling on, but that would be kind of funny if he did. Layla and Kelly beat Natalya and Maxine. That's the girl from NXT, since they didn't bother to explain it to anybody on TV. I figured I would take a moment to explain it here. I could have sworn that Natalya was a babyface last time I saw her, but I don't always pay close attention to SmackDown, I admit, so I could be wrong. But I could have sworn she was a babyface. Anyway, Beth Phoenix did commentary during this match. Layla pinned Maxine with a neck breaker in about a minute, if that. You know, if they just did this to promote Layla versus Beth at some point, they would have been better off just having them stand backstage and just point at one another and make mean faces. Why even bother having a match? Chris Jericho and Alberto Del Rio beat Randy Orton and Sheamus in a very good tag team match. Best thing on the show, I thought, after the Heyman segment. Sheamus nailed Orton inadvertently with a road kick. Then Jericho pinned Sheamus after a code breaker. So yes, Chris Jericho actually won a match. I know he beat Kofi Kingston a couple weeks ago, but that doesn't count. This was a big win for Jericho, one of the rare big victories he has gotten since his comeback. And that is a rare thing these days. Backstage, after the match, everybody involved said they wanted a shot at the World Heavyweight title. So John Laurinaitis changed the pay-per-view match to a four-way for the championship, so that will be it Over the Limit. Brodus Clay beat The Miz. Pinned him. He pinned a former WWE champion, so this is Brodus Clay's biggest win to date. Then we got pictures of Triple H as an office cyborg, apparently, wearing some sort of mechanical brace on his broken left arm. They teased that he would be live on Raw next week. And they said that Brock Lesnar had an invitation to be on the show this week, but instead he sent his legal representative, who turned out to be Paul Heyman. And there were some light ECW chants when Heyman came out, but they died out pretty quickly. I selfishly wish that, Heyman would have walked out with Lesnar on that Raw show in Miami the night after WrestleMania, selfishly, just because I was there. Reaction to that would have been just amazing. As amazing as the reaction was to Brock that night, it would have been that much more amazing had Heyman walked out with him. But anyway, Heyman said that Lesnar has been mistreated and underappreciated by the WWE fans and executives since day one. He said that WWE is much different than 10 years ago. So maybe he listened to the sound off last week when I talked about that very subject. He said John Laurinaitis signed Lesnar to a contract, and his verbal demands were then agreed to on national TV, which is true. As a result, Lesnar feels betrayed by WWE. Heyman then read a prepared statement from Brock Lesnar saying that he came to bring legitimacy back to WWE, but Triple H broke his agreement, so he broke his arm. Lesnar said he quit, and then Heyman left, and that was that. And obviously the idea here is to do a Triple H Brock Lesnar match, presumably at SummerSlam. Brock will not be on TV every week, thus enter Paul Heyman, who apparently will be making somewhat regular appearances on the show. At first, I thought maybe it was just a one-off, but it's not. He will be back, and I think that's a good thing. I think he and Brock have great chemistry together. And, you know, while Brock can be an awesome promo in small doses, like we saw with that video package a couple of weeks ago, you know, doing 10-minute monologues in front of a live audience is not his strong suit. You know, go back and watch that contract signing segment before Extreme Rules. Better yet, don't. It sucked. And I think Heyman is great at what he does, and I think he'll add a lot to the show. So my fear would be, how many appearances can Paul Heyman make without Brock Lesnar there, where all he does is come out and talk? I love Paul's promos, but even they can get old very fast. But Triple H has a broken arm that he is supposedly going to have surgery on, so he can't wrestle for a while, and they have to watch how many dates they use Brock for, because they only have him under contract for a certain number, so we find ourselves in what I call stall mode. And that's not the worst thing in the world, I don't think, to stall here, because I think we should have more guys, quite frankly, rotated on and off the show, so they don't have to make appearances every single week. John Cena included. Back in the 90s, not everybody was on every single Raw. You can have a week or two go by without somebody being on Raw. Now, back then, it was 1 hour instead of two. You have more time to fill now, but you also have, a bigger roster, although it is made somewhat more thin by the fact that you have this so-called roster split, which actually is kind of BS these days, since the SmackDown guys show up on Raw all the time. So you can get away with that. You can get away with having people not be on the show every single week. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But the thing about Heyman that I was left wondering after the show was what might have been. What might have been had Dixie Carter given into Heyman's demands in 2010 when they were talking about him going to TNA to overhaul the entire company? Because they definitely had talks, and they were pretty close. I don't think they ever came, you know, so close that, you know, it hinged on one tiny little thing and that's why it didn't happen. But they got pretty close. As far as this is a list of what Paul asked for, and I think they might have been willing to meet certain things but not others. You know, one of the things that I remember hearing about back then was Dixie Carter absolutely was adamant that Paul Heyman not be given the power, the sole authority to hire and fire people. More so about firing, because Dixie Carter, as we saw with how long they kept Vince Russo on in that company, is very hesitant about firing people unless there's good justification to do so. So that was one of the sticking points there, because Heyman absolutely was going to get rid of people. He was going to get rid of all the old guys except one, and my guess is the one old guy he would have kept would be Kurt Angle. That's my guess. We wouldn't have Hogan there, that's for sure. Bischoff wouldn't be there. A lot of those guys would not be on the TNA roster if Heyman would have come in and had his way. He probably would have brought in Gabe Sapolsky. I believe Gabe has even said that, you know, Paul was a mentor to him when Gabe was with him at ECW, and there may have been talks between the two of them back around the time that Heyman was considering going to TNA. He probably would have brought in Gabe, who's had quite a bit of success booking and promoting on the independent scene. You know, you have to think also that there was a pretty good chance that Brock Lesnar would have followed him over once his UFC career came to an end. I mean, maybe he would have gone back to WWE because they could offer him way more money than TNA ever could. But I really think that with his friendship and his loyalty and his trust in Paul Heyman, and knowing that he'd be a main eventer there for life, and knowing that he'd only have to work a couple of days a month down in Orlando and wouldn't have to deal with the travel and the schedule of WWE, I think we'd see Brock Lesnar in TNA today had they played their chips a bit differently. I mean, I guess we'll never know for sure, but hey, TNA just signed King Mo, so maybe he'll help turn their fortunes around. We'll see. Main event on this show was total garbage. I refer to the Briscoes World's Greatest Tag Team Ring of Honor match last night as a garbage match, and I said I didn't mean that was a bad match. I just meant there was a lot of plunder and stuff. Well, when I call this main event a garbage match, I mean that it was total garbage. It was trash. It was horrible. It was a bad match. It was boring. Lord Tensai pinned CM Punk. Yes, the WWE champion, CM Punk. Laurinaitis actually made this a handicap match involving Daniel Bryan as well, because that's what heel GMs do, you see. Finish saw Tensai badly botch the tree slam. Actually, to be fair, I went back and watched it. It looks like it may have been CM Punk, quite frankly, who fucked it up. He didn't do his part in wrapping himself around Tensai, and so Tensai couldn't hold him up and just sort of pushed him backwards. It just looked terrible. And then he spit green mist into his hand and pinned CM Punk with the Claw of Doom. What I don't understand is that he's clawing Punk's forehead, not his face. So explain to me why the hold is so devastating and why the green mist has to be on his hand. I don't understand that. Does it seep through the pores on his forehead and like Botox, it kind of paralyzes the nerves in his face? I don't understand how that works. Maybe somebody could explain that to me. Because he's touching the man's forehead and his skull. He's not touching his face. When this match was over, you could hear a pin drop in the arena. It was just... I've never seen a main event end with that sort of silence from an audience. And, again, that is a phrase, when you hear a pin drop in the arena, that's a phrase that is obviously prone to a lot of hyperbole. I mean, come on, who could really hear a pin drop in the arena? But in this case, I've never seen anything like that before. It was scary. And the worst part about it is that they changed Tensai's theme music. Remember I said a couple weeks ago, I made a comment in reviewing one of the shows, and I made a quick comment that the thing about Tensai was I thought he actually had some badass theme music. So, hey, I can enjoy it when he would come out. I enjoyed the presentation and, you know, Sakamoto throwing the salt, and here comes Tensai with that badass kind of Japanese instrumental music or whatever. So at least there was something about him to like. Well, now they've gone and changed his music, and it sucks. God, his music sucks now. So way to go. After the match, Daniel Bryan put Punk in the yes lock, and the show faded to black with a shot of Daniel Bryan screaming, yes! And I will end this report here on a positive note and say that as much as this absolutely sucked, the fact that they let Punk actually have the main event segment for a change and that an episode of Raw actually ended with Daniel Bryan's image, I did enjoy that. I was actually happy for those two guys because they don't ever have the faith and trust on Raw, their flagship show, to put either one of these guys in the main event, make them the focal point, fade to black with their image, but they did on this show. And I'd like to see that more often. Unfortunately, it may be the last time that they ever have enough faith to put Punk in the main event segment because the overrun for Raw on Monday night actually lost over 100,000 viewers. It actually lost viewers. That sounds impossible to believe. But it's true. It never happens, though. For that last segment, that overrun of Raw, you never hear about them losing viewers, let alone that many. That's not good. And, you know, you could say to yourself, surely they can't blame Punk for that. They put Lord Tensai in the main event, for Christ's sake. But you would be wrong. Believe me, WWE will blame Punk for this. I'm sure they will. And to be fair, CM Punk segments rarely ever do that well at the ratings if you look at the numbers. You know, out of curiosity, I always check the quarter hour numbers when they're in the newsletters and all that. I'm just curious to see how each segment does. You know, a couple weeks ago, for example, when Brock Lesnar broke Triple H's arm, that was the high water mark of the entire show. It had like a 3.5, and it just was a steep drop from there. So you can tell that people were genuinely interested coming off Extreme Rules, probably in the whole John Cena Brock Lesnar thing. And once they saw what was probably going to be the best segment on the show, they decided to tune out. And you look at the numbers on this show, and again, the Punk numbers traditionally, while he has been champion, have not been good. You know, he's had a couple of matches with The Miz that have literally driven away close to 1 million viewers. And it's just inconceivable to think that the WWE champion wrestling on Raw is driving away that many people. But he is, and I'm not quite sure why that is. One last note here on the whole Tensai thing, which I just thought was mind-blowing. WWE is supposedly looking at doing a CM Punk Lord Tensai title match at SummerSlam. At least they were before Monday night. And WWE has a history of wanting to put the, quote, evil foreign heel character in title matches at SummerSlam. I'm not quite sure why that is. The plan at one point in 2004 was for Chris Benoit to defend his World Heavyweight Championship against Kenzo Suzuki at SummerSlam. Remember Kenzo Suzuki? I bet a lot of you don't, actually. Probably a lot of new fans since then. But he was this Japanese character that they brought in. I think his manager was this woman, Hiroku, or whatever her name was. And, yeah, he was the stereotypical Japanese evil character. But they had high hopes for him. Vince McMahon said, we're going to put him in a title match with Benoit at SummerSlam. And thankfully, that never happened. Benoit instead dropped the belt to Randy Orton. The following year, Batista was to have defended the World Heavyweight Championship against Muhammad Hassan. But the character got dropped about a month before the show when they did that dumb terrorist angle on SmackDown where guys in ski masks came in to attack The Undertaker, and I think it aired the same day as the London terror bombings, and that really is what did him in. Had it not been, I think, for the London bombings happening, people would have probably been upset with the segment, but I don't think it would have resulted in the death of the character. But that was, in the eyes of a lot of people, it was just a classless move on WWE's part. When that happened, they should have edited the segment off the show, and they didn't. And anyway, Hassan was basically dead after that point because of all the pressure that was put on the company. So the match never happened. I think Batista ended up facing JBL instead. And my guess is, much like those matches that never happened, Punk vs. Tensai doesn't happen either. At least I certainly hope not. If Monday night was any indication of the kind of match that we would get from these two, that's a match I would rather not see at SummerSlam. So that's your Raw report. Let's move into some of the news items here. And let's talk about this because it's in the news and it's kind of a big story. It could get bigger. John Cena files for divorce from his wife of 3 years. The Miami Herald reported this week that John Cena filed for divorce from his high school sweetheart, saying that the marriage is irretrievably broken. And his wife, who signed a prenup when the two were married in 2009, has hired the same attorney who represented Linda Bollea in her divorce from Hulk Hogan. And Linda ended up with about 70%, I think, of the assets coming out of that divorce. I would suspect that will not be the case here. A lot of differences between the two. I mean, Hogan and Linda were married for so long. They were married for probably in the range of, what, 30 years? Probably over 30 years. And they had kids. Kids always complicates it. And the good news for Cena is that he didn't have kids with his wife. I mean, who knows if he had kids with somebody else? I mean, who knows? But he didn't have kids with his wife, and they were married for 3 years. It wasn't terribly long. Cena, in the article, is said to be worth $18 million. And I made a comment on Twitter. That's a lot of purple T-shirts and garden gnomes that John Cena has sold. But now you see the importance of all the merchandise that this guy sells and how much money it makes him and the company. For him to be worth that much, I'm sure. You know, a lot of that has to do with his salary and the pay-per-view main events and the payoffs at WrestleMania and all that. But merchandise, believe you me, is a very big part of that. And so he's worth, supposedly, in the range of $18 million. You know, according to the story, signed a prenup which gave him the right to take back all gifts and presents that were given to his wife during the marriage. Now, I'm not a lawyer. I've talked to people who would know more about matrimonial law than I, and even they're kind of bewildered by that, and they don't think that that's necessarily something that's going to be enforceable in a court of law. It's kind of like the Brock Lesnar thing when he signed the whole deal. He just wanted to get out of WWE. He signed a release that WWE drafted without even necessarily reading or understanding the fact that he was essentially signing away all of his rights to make a living for himself in pro sports. And when push comes to shove, when push came to shove, I should say, in that case, WWE was not able to enforce that. I think they realized that if it had gone to a judge or, you know, gone to court, it could have been struck down, which would have opened the floodgates for all these other non-competes that they have some of their guys sign. So Brock, who did sign the thing, did end up wrestling anyway in Japan, and he went to UFC and all that stuff. And so I don't know, you know, taking back all gifts and presents, it's kind of an odd thing. And one thing I did learn that I thought was kind of interesting, I learned that in a marriage, if you get engaged to be married, if you're a guy and you're giving an engagement ring to your would-be wife, and you do it on Valentine's Day, if you do it on their birthday, if you do it on Christmas, certain special occasions like that, there's some difference there where I don't believe you can get the ring back, whereas in other situations you can. But because in that case it falls on special holidays and just special days of some kind, I don't think you can get the ring back. I've learned some interesting things this past week about this and asking around. So anyway, the paper quoted an unnamed source saying that this will dwarf the Hogan divorce for nastiness. And I can't really say that I'm shocked by the news, given that Cena is never home. I mean, really, the guy is on the road all the time, either wrestling or doing personal appearances or make-a-wish dinners, filming movies. He's never home. Not saying that's the sole reason why the dude filed for divorce. I don't know why he filed for divorce, but the reality is you can't sustain a marriage that way. Although, to be fair, neither can most main eventers for various reasons in pro wrestling. You know, Steve Austin, The Rock, Ric Flair. For God's sake, Ric Flair. The Undertaker, I think Batista, Hulk Hogan, Bret Hart, Kurt Angle. I mean, many others can attest to how difficult it is to maintain a marriage in wrestling. According to TMZ, Cena has been miserable for many months over this marital situation of his and all the arguing with his wife, and he's been complaining to people about it in the back. And, you know, call me crazy, but for all of WWE's attempts over the years to get the fans to stop booing John Cena, this right here could be what ends up turning crowds in his favor. I mean, think about it. The story is only going to get bigger. It's only going to get nastier, supposedly. It's not going to go away. People read TMZ all the time and all that tabloid trash. So most fans are going to know that John Cena is going through a divorce. His wife will probably be painted in a rather unfavorable light, rightly or wrongly, as some money-grubbing, you know, woman who feels entitled to everything that her husband has earned. And guys can relate to that, you know, and they're a hell of a lot more likely to sympathize with the man in this situation than the woman. They may feel sorry for piling on Cena while all of this is going on. I really think that we may start to see a change in crowd reaction towards Cena in the coming months, especially if this does get very public and very nasty. I mean, if this goes away, if there's a payoff, if it doesn't get nasty and it just kind of, then it's not going to mean anything because people won't really know about it. But if this story is still out there, if it has legs, if it's going to be plastered all over Entertainment Tonight and Extra and The Insider, and it does get nasty, if his wife reveals some stuff about Cena that Cena would rather not have get out, I mean, that would be the worst thing in the world for Cena. But if that happens, I think we could definitely see a sea change as far as crowd reaction to this guy is concerned. As far as women goes, you know, women no longer being Cena fans because he divorced his wife. I hear people say that. Give me a break. If anything, I think the female support for Cena increases tenfold with this announcement. The guy that they have the hots for is now back on the market. Again, in situations like this, go on Twitter and check out the reactions. You'll find mostly girls defending Cena from this evil woman who wasn't good enough for him. They're crazy. All of them. They're all nuts. So I just think it'll be interesting to follow from a wrestling point of view. I mean, in one respect, it is his private life, and you could say, well, who cares? But it's news, you know, just like the Hogan divorce was news. It's out there. And the difference now is that Hulk Hogan is not an active performer. John Cena is still the face of WWE. He's the number one guy. Steve Austin went through a divorce when he was the number one guy, but we never heard about it because it was a different world back then. You didn't have TMZ. You didn't have all of this stuff. When Austin walked to the ring for his WrestleMania match in 99 with The Rock, the year he walked out wearing a t-shirt because he forgot his vest at home, you know, he was going through a divorce at that time. I didn't know that until he talked about it on his last DVD. You know, he won the championship, and that was a big time for him, but he was miserable because he was going through a divorce. This, the biggest star in wrestling, but nobody knew. But it's a different world now, so it is news. And I do think that it could end up having an impact, a positive impact, on his character, but it depends how big the story gets. I would suspect that we will hear more about this in the coming weeks. TNA announced some big news this week. I made reference earlier to King Mo earlier. That would be King Mo LaWall, who is a mixed martial arts fighter, pretty popular fighter. He has now signed a deal to compete both in TNA and Bellator. And LaWall is currently serving a suspension, a drug suspension, that I believe runs through October of this year. So he would not be able to fight before then. But supposedly he will be on TNA television and in a TNA ring for the first time at some point this summer. So we'll probably be seeing him in the next 2 months or so. And LaWall has always been a big pro wrestling fan. I'm actually kind of surprised that he has decided to go with TNA and not WWE. I believe he has made overtures to WWE in the past, and maybe he was turned down and TNA was his second choice, perhaps. He grew up idolizing wrestlers from the old school like Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes and Jerry Lawler. Which is why I figured with the Lawler connection, maybe he'd have an in WWE. But then again, WWE would never allow for an arrangement that he now has with TNA, where TNA says, you can compete with Bellator and you can be with us. WWE would never allow something like that. So instead we have this. And I don't know what the plan is with him as far as who he would face or anything like that. I guess TNA figures that he has a certain name value in the mixed martial arts world, and this is a big boon for their company. I didn't see that with Bobby Lashley when he was competing in TNA and also doing mixed martial arts fights. In fact, they did nothing with Bobby Lashley, and Bobby Lashley just kind of faded away in TNA. I don't remember him doing anything of any great note. hopefully they'll have better plans for King Mo. I've seen the guy cut promos and stuff, and he's got some personality and charisma. He's a character, so I guess we'll see what TNA does with him. But again, he's currently suspended after a drug violation and won't be fighting for several more months. And I guess if he goes to Bellator and becomes champion there, that could be a big deal for TNA. If the Bellator champion then goes for the TNA title, I wouldn't give him the title, but they made such a big deal about it this week. They put the press release out and they had a conference call and which you should do. I'm not saying you shouldn't do that. I just think King Mo does not have that sort of mainstream name recognition that's going to mean jack shit to most people out there. So it just was funny to me. It was funny that they made such a big deal about this. And I know who King Mo is. I'm willing to bet some of you do, and many of you probably don't, and many of you probably could care less. And so I think that's why this story isn't bigger than it is. Maybe if it was a Tito Ortiz or somebody with some greater name recognition, it could be a bigger deal. But there it is. That was the big news coming out of TNA this week, which I guess is better than most weeks when the news coming out of TNA is laughable. Or it's some other dumbass statement that Hulk Hogan or Eric Bischoff makes. So at least the news for TNA this week was positive news. It was good news. I want to mention something else about MMA here. And I know the MMA fans will be interested to hear this, but if you're a pro wrestling fan, I think it's also worth, kind of knowing about this. For the benefit of those of you who don't know, mixed martial arts at this point in this country is legal in most states. I think the fact that MMA in some states is still illegal is probably something many of you don't realize and think it's kind of stupid, and I would agree, that in 2012, the fact that this sport is illegal in some states is kind of amazing in many ways. And one of those states that MMA is illegal in, if you can believe it, is my home state of New York. UFC cannot run an event at Madison Square Garden, which they would love to do, and they've been waiting to do, because it is illegal in the state of New York. And really, I think New York and Connecticut are the only states that have athletic commissions in the entire country that mixed martial arts is illegal. They passed legislation in the state of Vermont on May 4th to legalize it, so it's legal in Vermont, but not New York. And the reason I bring this up is because this has been the pattern now for the last couple of years. Every year that they attempt to bring this issue to a vote in New York, because they can vote to make it legal, and there are definitely state senators and politicians here in New York that are in favor of legalizing it, because either they're MMA fans themselves, and they try to explain to their colleagues, listen, all you people who think this is human cockfighting and this is inhumane, you don't understand. You have an image of what it used to be 15 years ago. Right now it is heavily regulated. It's a lot safer in a lot of respects than the sport of boxing, where you've got two guys with these gigantically heavy gloves pounding the crap out of each other in the head. That's a hell of a lot more dangerous than most mixed martial arts fights where guys are just rolling around on the ground trying to get a submission. And then you have other people who may not give two shits about MMA. They may not even know much about it. But to their, understanding, it would bring a lot of money into the economy, and it would. Being able to have MMA events like UFC at Madison Square Garden, where the state of New York, gets a certain percentage, they're able to tax it and all that stuff, could bring in millions of dollars into the economy. And I can tell you that in New York, we could definitely use the money. We could definitely use that money. That could go to pay for certain programs that are getting cut. They're taking cops off the street. It's not really sensationalistic to say that by bringing MMA events here to the state of New York, that it would be a huge plus for the people who live here in this state. So that's the argument that some of those politicians would make. And then you have the other old curmudgeons who are probably 80 years old, who can barely hear, and who simply cannot listen to reason. They have a certain impression of what this thing is, and they will never, ever agree to legalize it in the state of New York. And there was a whole controversy here this week. Because they were going to potentially bring it to a vote, and it never even made it to a vote. That's how ridiculous this whole story is. Last year, it got shot down. The hope was that this year it would finally pass, and maybe they could get an event at the Garden later this year, and it did not even get a vote this year again. And now it's tabled until next year. So at the earliest that MMA could potentially be legalized in New York would be this time in 2013, and my guess is that it won't be legalized until 2014 or 2015. basically, what happened is the Democratic Conference discussed behind closed doors whether to bring a bill to legalize the controversial sport, as they call it. I'm reading here from the newspaper article. In New York, before Sheldon Silver, who was the speaker, determined that the votes were not there for it to pass. He said the vote, it will not come to the floor this year, is what he told the New York Daily News. He says the conference was pretty evenly divided. Essentially, what happened here is this. What happened is you have a bunch of old guys in suits and ties who were sitting behind closed doors in private. And Sheldon Speaker, this guy is, this, you know, he is Sheldon Silver, I should say, is the speaker. And he takes a look around the room and he says, let's get a show of hands here. Let's do a very informal vote here behind closed doors. I want to get a sense of how many of you would vote for this legislation, how many of you probably would not. And there's varying reports. He claimed, well, it was pretty evenly split. And the reason that we didn't bring it to a vote is because since it was so even, I know people who were not present in the room who would definitely not vote for it, which means it wouldn't have passed anyway. So therefore, there's no reason to bring it to a vote. That's basically his logic. Now, other people who were actually there have claimed that it was not evenly split. Supposedly, there were about 25 people who raised their hands to say nay. They would not be in support of it, when about 60 people, as estimated by somebody else there, said they probably would. So this whole notion that, oh yeah, it was so evenly divided, it probably wouldn't have passed anyway. What kind of logic is that? How do you not at least bring it to a vote? To have the gall to say that, well, this thing probably wasn't going to pass anyway, so we're not even going to bother to bring it to a vote, is a great glimpse into how, why politics sucks. And I'm a political junkie. I follow politics more on a national level than anything else. But you hear about, Chicago politics and how down and dirty it can be. Let me tell you something. In New York, it's almost as bad. And when I read this story, it actually made my blood boil because I'm a big pro wrestling fan. I'm a casual MMA fan. I'm not like the biggest MMA fan in the world. But I would love to be able to go to a UFC show at Madison Square Garden. I'd love for them to bring an event to the Garden, and they have their own version of Access. They have the UFC Fan Expo. And so maybe they could bring the Fan Expo in conjunction with an event and have a whole big thing in New York. And I would love to partake in that. And just the fact that And I can only imagine how, the MMA, the real hardcore MMA fans must feel. The fact that I can't even do that because it's considered illegal, because a bunch of these old fucks sit around a room and decide what's good for us and what's not good for us. Oh, this probably wouldn't pass. We're not even going to bring it to a vote. Mark Ratner, who works for UFC, said that it was, I think he said it was un-American. And you know what? I agree with him. I think it is un-American. I don't think it's, how is that democratic? How do you not even bring something to a vote because you say, well, it probably doesn't have enough votes? What kind of horseshit is that? It just made me so angry when I read this story. I had to talk about it here. And this is what's going on in New York. And like I said, New York and Connecticut are the only, I think, commission states left in the union. Anywhere in this country where this sport is still illegal. It's just incredible to me. Incredible. One last note here. Kind of a on this week in history type of thing. I mentioned it on Twitter and Facebook. 13 years ago, this week, Monday Night Raw did an 8.1 Nielsen cable rating, or over 6 million viewers is what the equivalent would be, for a show that went unopposed, because WCW Monday Nitro, I believe, was preempted on TNT by the NBA playoffs. And to this day, it is still the highest rating that Raw has ever done, and likely will ever do. And at the time, it was the largest audience for a regularly scheduled entertainment program in the history of cable television. And obviously, it was easily the highest rated show of any kind in the history of USA Network. Those are just sick numbers right there. Actually, 2 weeks after that, I believe it was 2 weeks later, when they had the Owen Hart Memorial Tribute Show on Raw, the night after their Over the Edge pay-per-view, Raw did a 7.2, which I think to this day is the second highest rated edition of Raw of all time. It was quite the time to be a wrestling fan back then. Raw was already kicking ass at that point, but even Nitro, Raw and Nitro would combine every single week at their peak, combine on cable television every Monday night to pull like a 10 or 11 rating, which is just crazy numbers for cable television at that time. And again, by that point, 99, Raw was dominating. That was really the golden period for them in terms of ratings. I'm not saying creatively. A lot of people would argue, quite frankly, that the year 2000 into 01 was creatively WWE's best and most exciting year. And in 2000, you didn't even have Steve Austin for most of the year. It was Rock and Triple H carrying the show, carrying the company. You had Undertaker. But even Undertaker missed several months that year. It was really Rock and Triple H, and then you had the supporting cast of guys like Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle had come in, the Radicals had come in, Rikishi and Too Cool were over, you had Kane. It was quite the period for WWE. And 8.1, over 6 million viewers. Raw Now, this past Monday night, scored a 3.0 rating, which was good for somewhere between 4.5 million viewers, maybe a little bit more. As things have changed over the last 13 years, I don't know if there's more or less people with cable television. You hear stories all the time about less and less people subscribing to cable TV. Maybe the number is less. The biggest difference of all is that there's so many more options that people have. You know, DVR definitely hurts to some degree, not to a large degree, if you look at the numbers. What really, I think, kills them is this the explosion of television cable channels. Now, that all the options that you have as compared to 13 years ago, it's pretty amazing stuff. And so, you know, an 8.1 back then to a 3.0 now, a lot of different things go into that, not the least of which is the fact that there is no more Nitro, there is no more WCW, there is no more competition. You know, TNA is not suitable competition for WWE. They're just not. You can't, you know, they're competition on some level. They're a competition for talent who may not want to go to WWE. They may go to TNA because they like the schedule or because they have friends there. But that's it. WWE is the only real game in town, and I think that hurts more than it helps. Competition helps spur on, I think, a better product, a better, better matches, just overall better shows. And when you don't have that, and it's just this one show that you either take it or leave it. You know, if you like Raw, then you're going to watch it. And if you think Raw is stupid, if you think Raw is boring, if you're just not into the characters like you used to be, you're not going to watch. And I think a lot of that has to do with why, you know, 13 years ago, there were newspaper articles all over the country. The Associated Press picked up the fact that Raw did an 8-1. And you don't really hear too many people talking about it. But Raw Monday night with, you know, CM Punk and Lord Tensai over there did a 3-0. It's quite the difference over the last 13 years. Time for Sound Off shoutouts. If you have a shout-out you'd like to send in along with your feedback, all that stuff should be emailed to me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. This first one here is for Steve from Leicester, England. He and his band members recently won a Battle of the Bands competition to play a major festival over in England. They will be getting an interview and a review in NME magazine. NME, I get it. That's a British music-based publication. And his band is called The Accidents. You can find them on Facebook at facebook.com/TheAccidentsUK. He says his band members aren't much into wrestling, but he listens to the Sound Off while they're busy writing songs. So if I have this right, they do all the work, and you listen to me. It's not a bad arrangement there, my friend. Congrats to Steve and his bandmates. That's very cool. And good luck at the festival. So we have Richard Knox, who also writes in, "Dear Solomonster, love the podcast and loved Desi Scoops Live last week. I'm from the UK, but still stayed up until 2 in the morning just to listen to it." Well, that's pretty cool. We're probably going to shoot to do another one the day after Over the Limit. It's not confirmed yet, but I would guess probably an hour before Raw the day after the pay-per-view might be the next edition of Desi Scoops Live, for those of you interested. Anyway, Richard says, "Any chance of a good luck shout-out for my A-level exams that are coming up soon? I should be revising, but as always, I find time to listen to the Sound Off." So good luck to Richard. Hope all goes well with that. This one comes in from Bertrand. "I've been listening to your podcast since episode 167 and think you are more entertaining than watching the actual shows. Hoping to get a shout-out." Well, ask and you shall receive. So I want to give a shout-out to Bertrand there. And you know what? Some weeks, looking at these shows, I can believe that. I don't know that... SmackDown was okay this week. I actually caught most of it. Raw, like I said, I wasn't terribly enthusiastic about Raw. If Paul Heyman didn't walk out for that promo, I don't know that, you know, other than the tag match, that there would have been anything redeeming about that show on Monday night. So I can believe that every now and then. The Sound Off is every bit as entertaining as that, as those shows. Lastly here, one of our listeners celebrated a birthday on Thursday of this week. He actually did not request a shout-out, which I respect more, but I want to give him one anyway. Happy birthday to David Menigo from Silver Spring, Maryland, a longtime listener of the show and a loyal David Otunga fan. As I told him on Twitter, "I shall wear a bow tie and carry a thermos in your honor. And I did. But really, David's a good guy. He's been a big supporter of the show. And so for that, I say thank you and happy birthday to him. So that's the shout-outs for this week. Again, if you have any you want to send in to me, thesolemonster@gmail.com is the most direct way to do that. If you send me shout-outs on Twitter and Facebook, I read everything, but I need everything organized in my email so I could kind of throw it into the rundown here. So email me if you have something you would like to contribute to the show, including your feedback. We got a ton of questions here. You could send your questions in to me as well. First, I've had a lot of people email me and Twitter me and all that asking me if I've seen the Avengers. If you saw on Twitter, I did see the Avengers finally this past Friday night. I saw the movie. I thought it was great. I really loved it. I really enjoyed it. I won't give away any spoilers. It's not really a spoiler so much as my favorite scene, without going into any details. For those of you that have seen it, my favorite scene of the entire movie easily was the one involving the Hulk and Loki. And I'll let you figure out which scene that was. But this is a wrestling podcast, most importantly, and I do want to draw one correlation to wrestling here, even if it may be a bit of a stretch, but just bear with me here. The one thing that struck me about the success of the Avengers, because the Avengers it was like the biggest box office opening weekend at the very least, of all time. And I don't know what the overall cum is for the movie now. It's got to be over $700 or $800 million. But, I mean, just domestically, that first weekend the movie came out here in this country did like $207 million. Just blew away Harry Potter, blew away everything else. And I think the reason is, besides the fact that Marvel makes pretty good movies, you know, I've seen Iron Man, I thought was great. I haven't seen the second one. I thought Thor actually was very good. And I cannot imagine Triple H in that role. I know that was a role that he had wanted, that he had either auditioned for or was going to audition for. And all I can say is, thank God he didn't get it, because I just don't think it would have been the same with him as Thor. I thought Thor was a very good movie. Captain America, wasn't really impressed with it. But you know, I kind of prepared myself going into the movie. And the thing that Marvel does so well is they do a very good job of giving you, you know, the background and the insight into these characters and making overall what are very good movies. I don't think I've ever seen a terrible Marvel movie, although if they did that Daredevil movie, I guess that might be one. But so they build their characters up very well, which is ideal in wrestling as well. You want to build up your characters to where people can care about them and they can emotionally invest in them. And so what Marvel went ahead and did, which was genius, was they had all these movies that came out and made millions and millions of dollars explaining who each of these characters are, getting you invested in the characters, and then they have the Avengers, which brings all of these superhero characters, all these, quote, main eventers, together. For what? To combat an invasion. They basically did an invasion angle in the movie when the portal, you know, they have basically, you know, Earth is under siege and the superheroes obviously have to save the planet and all that. That's the gist of the movie, right? From these invaders. Well, it's really no different in wrestling. Invasion angles, when done correctly, work. This was essentially one big invasion angle that just made Marvel, you know, millions and millions and millions of dollars. And in wrestling, you know, when they did the Invasion pay-per-view in 2001, which, again, they could have done so much more. I'm not going to get into that whole, you know, debate about the Invasion again. But that Invasion pay-per-view in 2001 did the biggest buy rate for any non-WrestleMania pay-per-view in WWE history, maybe in wrestling history. Invasion angles, I mean, when the Nexus first debuted, everybody was so excited. Holy shit, I've never seen an angle like this before. People were going out of their skin because they had never seen the wooden kind of underframe of the wrestling ring exposed. You know, during that first Nexus attack, when they were tearing the ringside area apart, they ripped the ring mats off, and people saw the wooden plywood. They were just going crazy. They had never seen anything like this before. And the Nexus was hot for a couple of weeks there. They did the attack on the Legends, which unfortunately resulted in bad things for Ricky Steamboat, who got bounced around pretty good during that angle and ended up with bleeding on his brain. But, you know, the Nexus was hot for a while there, and then, of course, they fizzled out because WWE dropped the ball and they lost at SummerSlam and so on and so forth. My point is, invasion angles, when done correctly, work. And to me, I look at the invasion at the Avengers movie from a wrestling point of view, because everything's got to be wrestling, come on. And it was like a totally well-done invasion angle with all these main event guys. You know, Thor is Triple H and the Hulk is, you know, The Rock. And if you fill in the blanks however you want to. And they have to fight back against the invading forces. And the movie did really well. So that's kind of the wrestling correlation I would draw there. The movie really, I mean, really it is. That's what it is. It's like a giant invasion angle, and the good guys have to try to beat the bad guys. And are they going to or not? You know, are they going to fall or are they going to succeed? So I thought that was kind of an interesting wrestling analogy, if not a bit of a stretch, but kind of a wrestling analogy I wanted to work in there. But I saw the movie. I thought it was great. I saw it in 2D because, quite frankly, from what I've read, to see it in 3D, you know, seeing it in IMAX might be cool. But it's just it's a waste of money. It's a waste of extra money. The way they rip you off for those tickets is just crazy. And 2D was just fine. I thoroughly enjoyed the movie, although I was very disappointed. I was under the impression that the Dark Knight trailer, which I have seen, but I was hoping to see it on the big screen. I was under the impression that the trailer for the new Batman movie was actually attached to the Avengers, and maybe for some people it was. For me, it wasn't. So, you know, we had Prometheus and some other stuff. But anyway, just wanted to get that out of the way. Let's get to your actual questions now. Joey has been a listener since episode 140. First, do you think the John Cena-John Laurinaitis feud feels like the Lashley-McMahon feud from 2007? And my second question, do you think it was odd that there was no ladder, steel cage, or last man standing match at Extreme Rules? Well, first, I had almost forgotten McMahon even had a feud with Bobby Lashley before you brought it up, so that tells you right there what I thought of that whole angle from 07. Cena Laurinaitis reminds me of every tired babyface versus heel authority figure angle that has ever been done since the heyday of Austin versus McMahon. It's just totally played out. And as far as your second question goes, I wasn't surprised to not see a cage match at Extreme Rules because their No Way Out pay-per-view in June will feature all cage matches for main events. And the ladders are also probably better saved for, you know, a show like TLC or Money in the Bank. You don't need a ladder match on every pay-per-view. Last Man Standing was surprising only because I had heard that Randy Orton and Kane was going to be a last man standing match, and then they just changed their minds and decided to make it a false count anywhere match, which, you know, is it really that big of a difference? I don't think so. Natasha writes in, this is in response to the mailbag from last week about women who love wrestling. While we are few and far between, the easiest way to find one is to go to the local indie shows. Don't go for the ones swooning over the wrestler who is all looks but no talent. Look for the ones who show a true interest in the art of the moves and storylines. At every indie show I go to, I see at least a few women who were not drugged there by their boyfriends, but truly want to enjoy the show. For men who are extreme fans, these are the ones you want. As a woman who has been a diehard fan most of her life, I just thought I would provide some insight. So thank you to Natasha for providing that insight. And as I said to her, I found the same to be true whenever I would frequent the Ring of Honor shows years ago. It's been a while since I've been to an ROH show, but whenever I would go to one at the Manhattan Center, you can always find the ones who were not all that interested in being there. They would almost look kind of frightened by being there. And then you would find the ones that were genuinely into the product. You know, they were cheering, they were screaming their heads off, and they had a genuine knowledge of who the guys were. And if that's the kind of person you're looking for, she makes a good point. You know, you go to shows like that, and you're bound to find more than a few ladies there who were really into it. Roberto in Lancaster, Pennsylvania writes in, Dear Solomonster, I've been a fan of El Generico since Ring of Honor's Final Battle 2010. I've watched a lot of his past and current work throughout the year last year, and the guy is amazing in the ring. So I started wondering if El Generico should be in WWE. I think if he was to be in the company, he'd be huge as a fan favorite to the younger fans. It would sell a big amount of merchandise, masks and t-shirts. What is your opinion? Do you think Generico should be in WWE? And if he were, how do you think they would use him? Lastly, do you know if he ever did any tryout matches in WWE? I've been a fan of the Sound Off since episode 145. Your show is great. Well, thank you for that. El Generico is, in my opinion, highly underrated. To the best of my knowledge, he has never gotten a WWE tryout. He did get one early last year with TNA, and apparently they were not interested because they did not sign him. You know, maybe now they would give him another look. They have this new gut check challenge on Impact. If they're legitimate and genuine about bringing guys from the indies, guys from outside the company in for a tryout, El Generico is as good as any. But my guess is right now, with the new Sinclair management and everything, he's probably under some sort of contract with Ring of Honor. I could be wrong about that. He wasn't on the Border Wars show. I don't know when the last show was that Generico was on for ROH. But anyway, I think with the right push, he could get over in WWE as a babyface, likely like a mid-card US or IC title contender type babyface. At the end of the day, if you can really work, and he can work, you will eventually get yourself over. They say, you know, the cream rises to the top. Well, sometimes, you know, WWE will try to do everything in their power to make it as difficult as possible. Chris Jericho, I mean, a lot of guys who came in who you would think would be big stars right off the bat had a lot of trouble getting over, but eventually they did. And I think Generico is a talented guy, just like Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan, CM Punk, these were guys that did not look like your prototypical WWE wrestler. They did not look like guys that one day would be world heavyweight champion, and they had to go through a lot of shit to get there, but eventually they did. I think Generico could get there at some point. And you could sell masks. You know, masks are an easy way to make money and all that. I just don't have any faith that WWE would do anything more with him because of his physique. He doesn't have much of a physique to speak of. You know, and they'll bring in guys like that every now and then. Zach Gowen had no physique, although I guess his thing was he had one leg. You know, not everybody on the roster looks ripped and torn to shreds, but how far would he get without having a physique like that? In my opinion, not very far. Not very far. And promos are also a very big part of WWE. And I'm not as familiar with Generico's promo work as I am with his in-ring work, so I can't speak to how good or not he is. I don't know if I've ever really heard him cut, you know, a real promo. And so that's very important in modern-day WWE. Sin Cara was a big star in Mexico, and they figured they would bring him over. He appeals to a certain demographic. That's why they haven't gotten rid of him yet, and they want him to get over, even though he has not cut one single promo yet on WWE television. But again, he fills a certain role that they need. What role does Generico fill? What audience does he cater to? The Hispanic audience? I don't think so. So I just don't have any faith that they would really do much with him if he ever did come over. Shane from Fort Lauderdale writes in, "Dear Solomonster, huge fan of the podcast, been listening since the 40s. My question is, which Monday Night Raw theme song do you like the best and why? Which one do you dislike the most?" I'll always say the original is the best. You know, that I think back to the old days of Monday Night Raw with that, you know, instrumental theme and the, I guess it would have been the saxophone at the end of it or whatever. I love that theme. So that'll always be my favorite. But to be perfectly honest with you, as far as since then, actual music that they've used, my favorite Raw theme is probably the current one by Nickelback. And I know Nickelback gets so much hate on the internet. People just despise Nickelback for reasons that are still have not still been sufficiently explained to me. I asked this question on Twitter a couple weeks ago, why all the Nickelback hate? And I got some answers, oh, they're just generic rock or they're not real rock or whatever. I don't buy that. There's got to be a reason why these guys are so hated. They're not my favorite band or anything, but I like some of their music, and I think their Raw theme song, the whole Burn It to the Ground, you know, Raw theme right now, may be my favorite Raw theme aside from the original one. So, you know, for all the Nickelback haters, I say fuck off, because, you know, when music is good, then you call it good. And to not give them credit for having any good music, I think, is just comical. Because if their music sucked as much as everybody says it sucked, then it wouldn't be used by WWE and other companies for video packages on TV and things like that. It would be buried, and you would never hear it. So I think that might be my favorite Raw theme. As far as my least favorite one, not that the song itself was bad, but because I don't associate good memories with that period of time in Raw history. I think that Union Underground song that they used like in 2002 when Bischoff was running Raw, I hate that song. I don't associate that song with a favorite time for me in Raw history. In fact, I thought that period sucked for the most part, so that probably would be my least favorite one just because it brings up bad memories for me. All right, we'll take one more question here this week, and this one will be from Steven from Atlanta. "Dear Solomonster, I know how rare it is to see wrestling shirts in public since it's not seen as the cool thing as opposed to the mid to late 90s. I've been recently impressed with a few of the new WWE shirts, Daniel Bryan's Yes shirt, both of the CM Punk shirts, and a few of the Miz's shirts. My question to you is, what are your favorite all-time wrestling shirts, and do you have any that you currently like?" I tell people all the time who ask me about it that my favorite all-time wrestling shirt is the Austin 316 shirt, which I think is the highest-selling wrestling shirt of any kind of all time. There's a reason for that. I've never in my life, when I used to wear that shirt, I bought the shirt at that time in the late 90s, and I would wear it, and I've never gotten a reaction to a shirt. I mean, ever in my entire life, I could wear a shirt with a picture of naked tits on it, and I don't think I would get the same response that I got from the Austin shirt. It was a positive response. It wasn't people, you know, mocking me or laughing at me for wearing a wrestling shirt. Of course not, because back then, wrestling was cool. Everybody knew who Stone Cold was. and they would look at the shirt and they would compliment me on it. Oh, you know, you got it. Look at that. You know, and they went, where'd you get it from? And I've never, ever gotten a reaction to a shirt like that in my entire life. People honking their horns. I'd be walking home from someplace. And I told the story once, the truck driver who, you know, was stopped at a light and I'm crossing the street and he honked his horn. Now he's driving a truck. So when a truck driver honks his horn, okay, it's enough to scare the shit out of you. I have never been more scared in my entire life because I wasn't expecting it. And so I'm walking along minding my own business and this truck driver honked his horn and I almost shat myself. And I thought, what the hell? What did I do? And I looked up and he was pointing at me. He was pointing at my shirt because he liked it. So, I mean, anyway, so that would be my favorite shirt. As far as shirts that I currently like, I would say this, and I've said this before. There are other websites out there aside from WWE that have great shirts. They're very creative. They're very funny. Barbershop Window is probably the most popular one right now. That Fair to Flair shirt that you saw me wearing in some of the photos from Wrestle Reunion when we were down at Mania in Miami, and I wore that shirt when I met Bobby the Brain Heenan. I got that shirt from Barbershop Window. They've got some really creative ideas. One of our own listeners has his own website. You can go to BreakingKayfabeTees.com. That's T-E-E-S. BreakingKayfabeTees. And as a matter of fact, he was kind enough to actually put together a Solomonster shirt. He beat me to the punch. I'm still dragging my feet on the first official Sound Off t-shirt, but he went ahead and put a little design together for a Solomonster shirt that I believe he's still selling. If you go to the website, I don't know if it's linked anywhere on the main page. You may have to ask on Facebook, and I'm sure somebody will give you a link to it. He's sending me one of the shirts, and I should get that in the next few weeks, and I think that's pretty cool. So sites like his as well have really funny, creative designs for wrestling shirts that you just would never find at WWE shops. So my advice to you is that if you're into that, if you want to buy wrestling shirts, I don't really do that anymore, certainly not through WWE, unless they come out with something just amazingly awesome that I must have, but check out some of these other websites, like the ones I mentioned, because I think you'll find shirts there that are actually pretty cool. So that would be my advice to you. That's going to do it for this week here on The Sound Off. If you have questions for the mailbag, shout-outs, as I mentioned, please email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter, @solomonster is my handle. We're getting more and more followers, so I appreciate that. Facebook.com/thesolomonster. You must friend me on my profile. I will give you friend access if you deserve it. And you can join our little community there. As I've said before, we have a live thread going each and every Monday night during Raw and for the pay-per-views, all the big shows, and there's a lot of great debate back and forth and some cool photos posted up there and all that. So friend me on Facebook, and you can also subscribe to The Sound Off in iTunes. Type in Solomonster Sounds Off, and the show will come right up. The SC Scoops live show that Noah and I did a couple weeks back, and again, we may do another one in the next few weeks, but the first show that we did, the return of SC Scoops Live the night after Extreme Rules, is currently in iTunes. I uploaded it to iTunes. It is there if you missed it. If you were not able to be a part of it because of the time zone difference, you live in other countries, you can go back and listen to that show. We took live calls and all that, so that's pretty cool. But you subscribe to The Sound Off on iTunes. It is automatically downloaded for you, and it's the easiest thing in the world. And again, if you want to leave me a review in iTunes, I would also very much appreciate that. That's going to do it for episode 218. I want to thank you, as always, for joining the show here this week and downloading the podcast and just generally supporting the show, because without you guys, I would not be able to do this every single week like I do, and I will keep doing it as long as you want me to. So we'll be back with episode 219 next week. I believe that will be the go-home sound-off before Over the Limit, which, if that is the case, I could have my dates wrong, but if that is the case, I'll probably have predictions and all that on The Sound Off next week, and any news as far as whether or not there will be another SC Scoops Live. So tune into The Sound Off next week for that. Till then, be well, stay safe. Thanks as always. We'll see you right back here next week. And again, to all the moms out there, happy Mother's Day.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
I am AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solomonster Sounds Off on SCScoops.com.